Chapter 109. Side, or on mine? Apostrophe, apostrophe, these questions, apostrophe, said Mr. Dombey, are all wide of the purpose, madam. Apostrophe, she moved between him and the door to prevent his going away, and drawing her majestic figure to its height, looked steadily upon him still. You answer each of them. You answer me before I speak, I see. How can you help it? You who know the miserable truth as well as I? Now, tell me. If I loved you to devotion, could I do more than render up my whole will and being to you, as you have just demanded? If my heart were pure and all untried, and you its idol, could you ask more? Could you have more? Apostrophe, apostrophe, possibly not, madam, apostrophe, he returned coolly. You know how different I am. You see me looking on you now, and you can read the warmth of passion for you that is breathing in my face. Apostrophe, not a curl of the proud lip, not a flash of the dark eye, nothing but the same intent and searching look, accompanied these words. You know my general history. You have spoken of my mother. Do you think you can degrade, or bend or break, me to submission and obedience? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Dombey smiled, as he might have smiled at an inquiry, whether he thought he could raise £10,000. If there is anything unusual here, apostrophe, she said, with a slight motion of her hand before her brow, which did not for a moment flinch from its immovable, and otherwise expressionless gaze, as I know there are unusual feelings here, apostrophe, raising the hand she pressed upon her bosom, and heavily returning it. Consider that there is no common meaning in the appeal I am going to make you. Yes, for I am going, apostrophe, she said it as in prompt reply to something in his face, to appeal to you. Apostrophe, Mr. Dombey, with a slightly condescending bend of his chin, that rustled and crackled his stiff cravat, sat down on a sofa that was near him, to hear the appeal. If you can believe that I am of such a nature now, apostrophe, he fancied he saw tears glistening in her eyes, and he thought, complacently, that he had forced them from her, though none fell on her cheek, and she regarded him as steadily as ever, as would make what I now say almost incredible to myself, said to any man who had become my husband, but, above all, said to you, you may, perhaps, attach the greater weight to it. In the dark end to which we are tending, and may come, we shall not involve ourselves alone, that might not be much, but others. Apostrophe, others. He knew at whom that word pointed, and frowned heavily. I speak to you for the sake of others. Also your own sake, and for mine. Since our marriage, you have been arrogant to me, and I have repaid you in kind. You have shown to me, and everyone around us, every day and hour, that you think I am graced and distinguished by your alliance. I do not think so, and have shown that too. It seems you do not understand, or so far as your power can go, intend that each of us shall take a separate course, and you expect from me instead, homage you will never have. Apostrophe, although her face was still the same, there was emphatic confirmation of this never in the very breath she drew. I feel no tenderness towards you, that you know. You would care nothing for it, if I did or could. I know as well, that you feel none towards me. But we are linked together, and in the knot that ties us, as I have said, others are bound up. We must both die. We are both connected with the dead already, each by a little child. Let us forbear. Apostrophe, Mr. Dombey took a long respiration, as if he would have said, oh, was this all? There is no wealth, apostrophe, she went on, turning paler as she watched him, while her eyes grew yet more lustrous in their earnestness, that could buy these words of me, and the meaning that belongs to them. Once cast away as idle breath, no wealth or power can bring them back. I mean them, I have weighed them, and I will be true to what I undertake. If you will promise to forbear on your part, I will promise to forbear on mine. We are a most unhappy pair, in whom, from different causes, every sentiment that blesses marriage, or justifies it, is rooted out, But in the course of time, some friendship, or some fitness for each other, may arise between us. I will try to hope so, if you will make the endeavor to, and I will look forward to a better, and a happier use of age than I have made of Uther Prime. Throughout she had spoken in a low plain voice, that neither rose nor fell. Ceasing, she dropped the hand with which she had enforced herself to be so passionless and distinct, but not the eyes with which she had so steadily observed him. "Madam," apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, with his utmost dignity, "I cannot entertain any proposal of this extraordinary nature." She looked at him yet, without the least change. "I cannot," apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, rising as he spoke, "consent to temporize, or treat with you, Mrs. Dombey, upon a subject, as to which you are in possession of my opinions and expectations. I have stated my ultimatum, madam, and have only to request your very serious attention to it." Apostrophe, to see the face change to its old expression, deepened in intensity. To see the eyes droop, as from some mean and odious object. To see the lighting of the haughty brow. To see scorn, anger, indignation, and abhorrence starting into sight, and the pale blank earnestness vanish like a mist. He could not choose but look, although he looked to his dismay. "Go, sir," apostrophe apostrophe she said, pointing with an imperious hand towards the door. "Our first and last confidence is at an end. Nothing can make us stranger to each other than we are henceforth. Apostrophe, I shall take my rightful course, madam," apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, undeterred, you may be sure, by any general declamation. Apostrophe, she turned her back upon him, and, without reply, sat down before her glass. "I place my reliance on your improved sense of duty, and more correct feeling, and better reflection, madam," apostrophe said Mr. Dombey. She answered not one word. He saw no more expression of any heed of him, in the mirror, than if he had been an unseen spider on the wall, or beetle on the floor, or rather, than if he had been the one or other, seen and crushed when she last turned from him, and forgotten among the ignominious and dead vermin of the ground. He looked back, as he went out at the door, upon the well-lighted and luxurious room, the beautiful and glittering objects everywhere displayed, the shape of Edith in its rich dress seated before her glass, and the face of Edith as the glass presented it to him, and betook himself to his old chamber of cogitation, carrying away with him a vivid picture in his mind of all these things, and a rambling and unaccountable speculation such as sometimes comes into a man's head, how they would all look when he saw them next. For the rest, Mr. Dombey was very taciturn, and very dignified, and very confident of carrying out his purpose, and remained so. He did not design accompanying the family to Brighton, but he graciously informed Cleopatra at breakfast, on the morning of departure, which arrived a day or two afterwards, that he might be expected down, soon. There was no time, to be lost in getting Cleopatra to any place recommended as being salutary, for, indeed, she seemed upon the wane, and turning of the earth, earthy. Without having undergone any decided second attack of her malady, the old woman seemed to have crawled backward in her recovery from the first. She was more lean and shrunken, more uncertain in her imbecility, and made stranger confusions in her mind and memory. Among other symptoms of this last affliction, she fell into the habit of confounding the names of her two sons-in-law, the living and the deceased, and in general called Mr. Dombey, either Grandjaby, apostrophe, or Dahmer, apostrophe or indifferently, both. But she was youthful, very youthful still, and in her youthfulness appeared at breakfast, before going away, in a new bonnet made express, and a traveling robe that was embroidered, and braided like an old baby's. It was not easy to put her into a flyaway bonnet now, or to keep the bonnet in its place on the back of her poor nodding head, when it was got on. In this instance, it had not only the extraneous effect of being always on one side, but of being perpetually tapped on the crown by Flowers the maid, who attended in the background during breakfast to perform that duty. Now, my dearest Granjaby, apostrophe said Mrs. Skewton, you must positively prom, apostrophe she cut some of her words short, and cut out others altogether, come down very soon. Apostrophe, I said just now, madam, apostrophe returned Mr. Dombey, loudly and laboriously, that I am coming in a day or two. Apostrophe, bless you, Dommer. Apostrophe, apostrophe, here the major, who was come to take leave of the ladies, and who was staring through his apoplectic eyes at Mrs. Skewton's face with the disinterested composure of an immortal being, said, Begad, ma'am, you don't ask old Joe to come. Apostrophe, apostrophe, mysterious wretch, who's he? Apostrophe, apostrophe, lisped Cleopatra. But a tap on the bonnet from Flowers seeming to jog her memory, she added, Oh, you mean yourself, you naughty creature. Apostrophe, apostrophe, devilish queer, sir, apostrophe whispered the major to Mr. Dombey. Bad case. Never did wrap up enough, apostrophe the major being buttoned to the chin. Why who should J.B. mean by Joe, but old Joe Backstock Joseph your slave Joe, ma'am? Here. Here's the man. Here are the Backstock fellows, ma'am. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the major, striking himself a sounding blow on the chest. My dearest Edith Granjaby, it's most ordinary thing, apostrophe said Cleopatra, pettishly, that major apostrophe, Backstock. J.B. Apostrophe cried the major, seeing that she faltered for his name. Well, it don't matter, apostrophe said Cleopatra. Edith, my love, you know I never could remember names, what was it? Oh, most ordinary thing, that so many people want to come down to see me. I'm not going for long. I'm coming back. Surely they can wait, till I come back. Apostrophe, Cleopatra looked all round the table as she said it, and appeared very uneasy. I won't have visitors, really don't want visitors, apostrophe she said. Little repose and all that sort of thing is what I require. No odious brutes must approach me till I've shaken off this numbness, apostrophe and in a grisly resumption of her coquettish ways, she made a dab at the major with her fan. But overset Mr. Dombey's breakfast cup instead, which was in quite a different direction. Then she called for Withers, and charged him to see, particularly that word was left about some trivial alterations in her room, which must be all made, before she came back, and which must be set about immediately, as there was no saying how soon she might come back, for she had a great many engagements, and all sorts of people to call upon. Withers received these directions with becoming deference, and gave his guarantee for their execution. But when he withdrew a pace or two behind her, it appeared as if he couldn't help looking strangely at the major, who couldn't help looking strangely at Mr. Dombey, who couldn't help looking strangely at Cleopatra, who couldn't help nodding her bonnet over one eye, and rattling her knife and fork upon her plate and using them, as if she were playing castanets. Edith alone never lifted her eyes to any face at the table, and never seemed dismayed by anything her mother said or did. She listened to her disjointed talk, or at least, turned her head towards her when addressed, replied in a few low words when necessary, and sometimes stopped her when she was rambling, or brought her thoughts back with a monosyllable, to the point from which they had strayed. The mother, however unsteady in other things, was constant in this, that she was always observant of her. She would look at the beautiful face, in its marble stillness and severity, now with a kind of fearful admiration, now in a giggling foolish effort, to move it to a smile, now with capricious tears and jealous shakings of her head, as imagining herself neglected by it. Always with an attraction towards it, that never fluctuated like her other ideas, but had constant possession of her. From Edith she would sometimes look at Florence, and back again at Edith, in a manner that was wild enough, and sometimes she would try to look elsewhere, as if to escape from her daughter's face, but back to it, she seemed forced to come, although it never sought hers unless sought, or troubled her with one single glance. The best concluded, Mrs. Skewton, affecting to lean girlishly upon the major's arm, but heavily supported on the other side by Flowers the maid, and propped up behind by Withers the page, was conducted to the carriage, which was to take her, Florence, and Edith to Brighton. And is Joseph absolutely banished? ? Said the major, thrusting in his purple face over the steps. Damn, ma'am, is Cleopatra so hard-hearted as to forbid her faithful Anthony Backstock to approach the presence? ? Go along. ? Said Cleopatra, I can't bear you. You shall see me when I come back, if you are very good. ? Tell Joseph, he may live in hope, ma'am, said the major, or he'll die in despair. ? Cleopatra shuddered, and leaned back. Edith, my dear, she said. Tell him, what? ? Such dreadful words, said Cleopatra. He uses such dreadful words. ? Edith signed to him to retire, gave the word to go on, and left the objectionable major to Mr. Dombey, to whom he returned, whistling. I'll tell you what, sir, said the major, with his hands behind him, and his legs very wide asunder, a fair friend of ours has removed to Queer Street. What do you mean, major? Inquired Mr. Dombey. I mean to say, Dombey, returned the major, that he will soon be an orphan in law. Mr. Dombey appeared to relish this waggish description of himself so very little, that the major wound up with the horse's cough, as an expression of gravity. Damn, sir, said the major, there is no use in disguising a fact. Joe is blunt, sir. That's his nature. If you take old Josh at all, you take him as you find him, and a devilish rusty old rasper, of a close-toothed, J.B. file, you do find him. Dombey, said the major, your wife's mother is on the move, sir. I fear, returned Mr. Dombey, with much philosophy, that Mrs. Skewton is shaken. Shaken, Dombey. Said the major. Smashed. Change, however, pursued Mr. Dombey, and attention, may do much yet. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.